Welcome, listeners, to a new bonus episode of Oh My Week. And today, special guest, drum roll and remote people. We have with us today, Jessica Freeburg. And first of all, Jessica, welcome. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
And Jessica, I know, is part of the Horrors Writers Association or something, yes? Or did I just make that
yes.
up? Okay, good. And she's written a graphic novel. That was with Jay Asher Piper, and then she's got a bunch of other books, and she's got all the ghost stuff going on. So this is actually going to be great for us, because the last horror writer we spoke to was Jonathan Jans, and that's, listeners, go back to episode 15.5 to hear about that. So horror is totally out of my wheelhouse, so I'm glad to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. It should be fun.
So let's dive in and just start from the beginning. How do you go from being, this wonderful person walking around in your life one day, and then all of a sudden now you're an author? How did we make that leap? However long or short you want to make, you want to go into
that. Yeah, I feel like I've had a long, convoluted journey to becoming an author. I actually started out as a teacher, and I was a family consumer science teacher. So I taught cooking and sewing, and they really needed human growth and development teachers, so they dragged me into doing that. So I was basically a sex ed teacher.
Wow.
And then I started staying home with my kids. I had one son while I was teaching, and then I was pregnant with my second one. And I was working with my students, kind of figuring out, like, how many hours do you spend with your child awake if you work full-time, and how many hours does the daycare provider spend with them? And
right.
We did the math, and I looked at my class, and I said, I don't think I'm coming back next year.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of decided I wanted to have that quality time with my kiddos, so I took a break from teaching, figuring I would go back someday, and started staying home with the kids. While I was staying home with them, I always liked writing, and I was always a writer. I wrote a lot of poetry, that I put to music with my guitar.
Wow.
And stuff like that. So I started just trying to write poetry and children's books, thinking I would be a picture book writer.
Yeah.
And I sold a couple poems actually, to some children's magazines, and that kind of kept me going. It was like those little bits and pieces that made me feel like a true writer. So I
yeah.
got paid, I think, like $50 for the poem, and I was super excited. And I joined a group called the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. They have chapters all over the world. And I jumped right into that and started volunteering. I became the assistant regional advisor for the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
And just became super involved in that professional writers organization. I really recommend to anyone wanting to be a writer to get involved in any type of writer's organization or group that you're able to do, just for the learning and the camaraderie and learning about craft, because it is such a unique industry, and it can be confusing. There's a lot of ins and outs that people don't tell you about or don't know about. So
right.
it's good to connect with people there. So I did that for about 10 years. During that time, I just kept on writing. I went to writers' conferences through that organization, had my work reviewed every chance I got by editors and agents. I had a critique of like 5 pages of this story idea that I had by an agent at one of those conferences, and she was so excited. She actually stood up when I walked in the room and started jumping up and down, and she's like, I love this story so much.
Wow.
And I was super excited, and she's like, I want to read the rest of it. Send me the rest. And I was like, that's all of it.
Oh.
I haven't written anymore.
Oh, no.
So she said, when you get it done, send it to me. So that eventually, fast forward about a year and a half, I think, she became my agent when I finally got that book finished, and I sent it to her.
Wow.
That was my first book, Living in Shadows.
Wow. So how did you go... I was like, we got to backtrack a second. How do you go from writing poems and putting that to music, poems for kids and putting that to music, to ghosts and horror stuff? How do we make that happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was super organic. I would go to these conferences and they would say, write what you know, right? So
right.
I thought, well, what do I know? So this is kind of an embarrassing fact, number one, about me, is I've been seeing ghosts and spirits my entire life. So I was really drawn to like those ghost hunting shows because it was super validating to have someone else like on TV actually capturing evidence of ghosts, because otherwise you just kind of feel like a crazy person.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I was writing the book Living in Shadows, I was actually living through a very personal haunting of our home. I was on a show, I think last August, on the Travel Channel called My Horror Story. And I shared this story about this haunted dresser that my husband and I had. And we didn't know that the haunting was coming from the dresser until we got rid of the dresser. And then everything kind of subsided. But during that time, I was trying to write picture books. But while I'm sitting downstairs at night trying to write picture books, I'm watching toys turn on by themselves and balls roll across the room and, you know, turn corners around, you know, corners and stuff all on their own. So
wow.
I was living through this really creepy haunting and I was like, maybe I should be writing a creepy book. So that's kind of how that started. And I just embraced it wholeheartedly when I finished that book. And it was kind of like a snowball effect. My agent said to read a book called Get Known Before the Book Deal. And that book is all about building a platform as a writer.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of geared more toward nonfiction writers, but I was writing fiction. So I kind of sat there thinking about this, well, what kind of a platform can I build around this creepy ghost story? And I was like, clearly I'm supposed to go ghost hunting and start, you know, blogging about it and talking about it and that kind of thing. So I did that one weekend. I coordinated a group with a real life ghost hunter, and he led the group, and it was all a bunch of my author and illustrator friends that ended up coming, and we sat down at the end of the event and we're like, this was so fun and so inspirational. We have to do this all the time.
Wow.
And we have to make a group and just make this a thing that we do and write off on our taxes. So Ghost Stories Inc. was born, and now I have a group of creative professionals that includes authors, illustrators, artists, filmmakers. And we go to haunted locations all across the United States for creative inspiration and do paranormal investigations and teach just some art and writing classes for kind of writer retreat weekends with that.
Oh, wow. So Ghost Stories, Inc., that's not for publishing purposes. That's for the writers to come together and go to these places for their own creative endeavors, which then go in their own directions.
Yes. Yep. We did an anthology through the group, and that was
right.
Super fun. It was one of those things where if you came to one of our events and you could submit a short story inspired by your time at that particular location. So we have an anthology called Night Vision that we put out a few years ago, and fully intending to do that once a year, but boy, life is busy, and
we haven't
had a chance to do another one of those. I was the contributor and the editor of it, along with Natalie Fowler, who's also part of the group, and it was a lot of work for us to pull that together and edit it, but it was a really cool experience and fun to get authors who had never been published before that were able to submit work and get published in that book.
Yeah, that is great. Yeah. So are these geared toward any specific age group, or is it considered just adult fiction or just general fiction?
Yeah, so for that anthology, we tried to keep it PG or PG-13 because most of us were writing for kids at the time.
Right, okay.
So it's not gratuitously gory or anything like that, but there are, you know, they're pretty creepy. I don't know that I would let a 10-year-old read it necessarily.
Right, right. So that's also what... interesting that you're bringing up, because going back to when I spoke to Jonathan Jens, he was talking about, I came in with the perception that horror is just all about creepiness, and he was kind of raising the point that sometimes horror is not just about, you know, the jump scare, and it's not just about how much can I creep you out, but it's also sometimes about exploring like how dark people can be. So
yes,
but it sounds like that's not the direction. It sounds like you tend to go more in like the ghost direction, unless you're not seeing ghosts in like a creepy kind of way, but you also have a different way of looking at that?
Yeah, I do tend to go more toward the ghost direction. You know, I just dusted off in the anthology piece that I contributed to another book. That book is called Death Awaits, and I have a story in there that I adapted into a 30-minute screenplay for some Netflix series that never ended up happening. But I dusted that off and I was reading it, and I hadn't read it in so long. I actually creeped myself out and I couldn't walk up the stairs. Like, felt like something was walking behind me when I got done. I scared the crap out of myself. But so that one was more like of legends. So I like legends too. I have a book called Monsters of the Midwest. And I mean, I would embrace anything that's unknown, I guess. I like that type of scary. But in that particular story, it was about the legend of Rawhead, which is this really horrifying entity that seems to appear before young children and appears to them in the middle of the night. And it doesn't do anything to them. It just sits there and stares at them. And it's basically got flesh kind of falling off of its body and some kind of blood. And it's kind of charred, almost like it's been through a fire. And this has been reported multiple times by many different people. So, you know, to me, that's pretty horrifying, and that's probably scarier than just seeing a ghost in your bedroom at night. But
yeah.
To write about that kind of stuff too.
See, how can you be so nice and bubbly when you're talking about things that are so dark?
No, that's what everyone says. I used to do a show called Darkness Radio that was on the radio for years. I was only on it for a little while, but I think they had that show going for about 10 years. It's a podcast now. But I did the paranormal news, and I learned so much from those guys, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis. They're a wealth of knowledge, and there's just so much interesting kind of unknown stories out there, you know, that people want to talk about because they've had these experiences. And like I said, you feel crazy if you don't think anyone else is having these experiences.
Yeah, well, it almost sounds like you have your kind of like niche group, but it's not like four people. Like, it's a very, it's almost in a way, it is a specific audience, but also not at the same time. So,
yeah,
and that's sort of what it sounds like. Well, how much? How much of it also is that it's just that, you know, there's amount of seriousness that you're gonna have toward it. You know, if you're seeing this and this is something you fully believe in, so you're gonna have a, you know, X amount of seriousness toward it. But how much of it is also just because it's like fun and you're getting a kick out of it? Or like that element doesn't really come into play over here?
Oh, I think it's both for me. I mean, I find it fascinating. I find it really intriguing. And I'm really a history nerd and a research geek. If you look at the books that I've written, a lot of them are just history books. But I only take history opportunities to write history books that are dark pieces of history. So I've written a book about the Holocaust for kids. I've written about the Titanic sinking. I wrote about Jamestown, which I didn't know was as dark as it was until I started researching it and found out that they actually ate each other to survive.
Oh, God.
I love history, and I find just the research piece of it really fun. And I think it's fun to take some of these ideas, too, and these legends and these stories and embellish them and make them even creepier.
So do you have any plans to write something on the Donner Party or that was, it seems if you like the eating people thing. Ew. so it's actually an interesting thing that you brought up, because I did see that you had these, they didn't seem like historical fiction though, the history books. So, okay, Titanic, it's kind of obvious what the dark side of that is, but okay, the Holocaust, I guess too, but how do you take a story about the Holocaust, you're writing it for kids, on the one hand, you're not going to just shade over everything, and at the same time, like, you're not really showing them pictures of mass graves, or how do you approach something like that?
Yeah, so I've been super lucky in my writing career because of my involvement with helping to run the regional section of SCDWI here in Minnesota. I've made connections with editors, and Capstone is the publisher who publishes a lot of books for kids. They come up with ideas in-house, and then they hire authors that they think would be a good fit for those. So they've approached me with a lot of those nonfiction books and asked if I would be willing to write those. So that's kind of how I landed on those. And I'm always a little bit selective because, like, I want it to kind of be keeping in with my brand, and I'm kind of the creepy lady. So I will only take the books that kind of fall into that brand. So that's how I landed on those. With the Holocaust, it's a dark book. I don't even like to talk about it. It makes me cry. I just researched a lot of journals that were written by kids, and it was a book for kids, so I want to make sure the characters were identifiable. It was a historical or a narrative nonfiction, so it was written kind of like a fictional work with, you know, dialogue and all of that, but it was actually a nonfiction work. Those are kind of tricky to write, but
but
super fun, challenging. So it kind of brings the stories to life for those kids. And a lot of the characters that I chose, I shouldn't call them characters, they were real people. A lot of the people I chose to include in that book didn't make it through the Holocaust. So it is very sad and difficult. But an important part of history I think kids need to understand happened.
Yeah, that's like non-fiction horror in going into the dark part of man. That does go into that. I once heard a survivor say, because she goes around and she speaks, I don't know where she is now, but she would go around and she'd speak to schools and they'd say, you know, how can you be telling this stuff to kids? And she's like, if I had to live through it, they can hear about it, kind of. Because you have they have to know. Like, you can't not let people know about, especially as far as historically it goes, because even any joke you want to have about, you know, either Donna Parter or Jamestown or something like that, people, you have to know. We can't, that's not something you can just call. Wow, that's so crazy. Like, I can't even imagine having to break down information and giving it to kids. That's just, wow.
That's was big. The second book I wrote, and I was completely overwhelmed by it. I cried the whole time I was writing it. I drank a lot of wine. I hate to admit, I drank a lot of wine and cried while I wrote a children's book.
Yeah, oh man. Well, how much, especially when it's, well, I guess you could, I know you can only speak to your experiences, but when a company is coming to an author and saying, hey, this is the idea that we have for the book, do you want to write it? How much, are they just pitching that? Is it like the opposite, that they're pitching the idea to you and then you have a broad, open, you know, way they could go about it? Or are they very specific in their guidelines of what they want from you?
Well, it varies. So I think with Capstone, they tend to be a little bit, they have more structure, and because they're typically creating a series and they'll ask you to write one or two or however many books in that series. So they want to keep it formatted very similarly throughout the series. For other books like The Monsters of the Midwest, that was another book that I was approached by a publisher and they asked if I would be willing to write that. And that was a lot more, I wouldn't say loosey-goosey, but we had a little bit more wiggle room with that. So it just depends on the situation.
Wow. I actually just thought of this. With Ghost Stories, Inc., how many, have you been to almost everywhere in the U.S. that they have? Like, you're the one that when you go to, like, Savannah, they're like, the ghost tour of Savannah. That's your group takes that tour.
Of course.
So have you been able to travel to most states like that? Or do some states have more, you know, quote-unquote hauntings than other states? Like, are there some hot spots?
I would say there are a lot more states I'd like to go to. And I feel kind of cheated because, you know, I have three kids. And I shouldn't say them that order. I don't feel cheated because I have three kids.
Right.
But I have three children, and one of my children does professional theater, and her schedule is completely insane.
Wow.
And I always feel like I don't want to put that on anyone else. So when I'm traveling to speak, I'll go to all of these awesome places. Like, I was in Georgia, and I wasn't far from Savannah, and I wanted to go so bad and, like, just and take it in and do a ghost tour. Instead, I was there for one night. I got there an hour before I had to speak to the kids. You know, I took a very early flight from Minnesota to get there. I did my hair in the bathroom at the school. That's how early it was.
Wow.
And then I had dinner with the faculty. I did have them take me to a super cool, creepy graveyard and church that had like a baptismal well outside.
Okay.
That was super cool and creepy. That was kind of inspiring an idea that I was working on. With Jay Asher, we were working on another idea.
Oh, nice.
But I didn't get to go to Savannah because I had to get up in the morning and catch a flight home. So I've been to all these awesome places, and I'm usually, like, in and out so fast to do my speaking thing and leave. But, yeah, we've been to, like, you know, we've been to L.A. We did a lot of places that were kind of centered around the Manson murders.
Oh,
That was fascinating. We kind of tromped around out in the wilderness and found Spahn Ranch, where Manson and his followers were living during that time period. Super cool. Just very surreal moment when we actually walked upon the space and we realized that's where they lived and he plotted out these horrible crimes. And then we've done some places in New York. The Moorish Jamal Mansion was a really cool spot that we investigated. But a lot of us are kind of Minnesota based, so we do tend to kind of stick around this area quite a bit more than probably we would like, just because life being so busy.
Yeah.
And we all have children.
Yeah.
But we go to the Palmer House Hotel in Sac Center, Minnesota, a lot. We do a lot of events there. If you ever have a chance to kind of Google that and watch some things about that, we have one actually connected to the Ghost Stories Inc. website. I think it might be called the Ghost Boy or something to that effect, but we caught some incredible evidence of paranormal activity, and it's on YouTube, but I think it's linked to my Ghost Stories Inc. website.
Oh, well, that's... You know, one day you'll all eventually get to go. The investment that you're choosing now is probably way more worth it than just a ghost tour. So investing in the children, you know. Well, so that's actually, now that you met with paranormal activity, is that, you know, when a new ghost or horror film comes out, are you guys all lined up at the box office and, like, sleeping in line the night before? Or do you all have your, like, no, we really watch rom-coms when we're not writing horror stories?
So funny, because I feel like I should know all the good horror movies, right, and all the good scary books. I don't. I feel like I don't have the time to just sit down and enjoy those things like I wish I did. Partly because I have three kids, and they're, one of them still pretty small, so I can't just sit down and watch a horror movie,
yeah,
and have her,
yeah,
hearing the gory sounds of it in the background.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
When she's older, though, man, I'm just going to binge watch horror movies.
Are your kids like, yeah, that's my mom, she's the creepy lady? Or they're all on, like, yeah, it goes. They're all on board with you with that.
They're very supportive. yeah, they're not too embarrassed of me anymore. But
anymore. Well, just to finish that off, and then I want to ask about the graphic novel and the collaborating. When you do have time to read, do you pick up a horror book? Or are you looking, do you try to, like, read outside of your genre? Or it depends on the day, you know?
It really does depend on the day. Like, I have Little Women sitting at the library with my name on it right now. I kind of want to reread that. I haven't read it in a long time.
Yeah.
But right now I'm reading a book called Expecting to Die by Lisa Jackson. And it's kind of a creepy mystery. I think there might be a Bigfoot in it. I'm not sure quite yet. But there's a murder, and it's pretty dark. So, like, I'm all over the place.
Right, okay. So, switching over, just I wanted to speak specifically about Piper, because that's a graphic novel you did, and then you collaborated with someone on it. I mean, you collaborated with Jay Ashram, but you collaborated with someone on it. So how did that come about? How do you come about the fact that you're not just writing the graphic novel now, but you're actually collaborating with somebody else on it? Because now it's not just you anymore. You got two other people, I guess, to think about. Or is it only one other person? The graphics don't have anything to do with you, the art.
Yeah, well, so the way that came together, I actually had Jay come and speak in Minnesota when I was running SCBWI, and we got chatting about my ghost hunting stuff, and he's really intrigued by that kind of stuff, too. So he's come on investigations with my group and gotten to be a really good friend, and he actually wanted to write a movie. I had kind of said, yeah, I'll write a movie with you, but I don't want to write a book with you, because I don't want to be like, you know, Jay Asher and then this, like, really small-named author, which is sort of hilarious when we get our books from other countries. Like, it's been translated in a few different languages. His name is always ginormous and mine's super tiny. And I'm like, there it is. That's what I said I didn't want to have happen.
Yeah.
But so we actually wrote Piper as a feature film, and we took the script to the film agent that he had been working with for 13 Reasons Why. And he kind of, and we actually had written a couple different screenplays together prior to Piper. We had written a comedy one, like, totally kind of out of both of our normal genres, but and that was fun. But we took Piper to him, and he said, you know what, it would be easier to sell this as a movie if it was a book first. So we're like, okay, fine. We took it to Penguin Random House, Razorville Division, and the publisher there that Jay was working with on his other books, and they looked at it and said that they would be happy to do it as a graphic novel. So we gave it to them. We looked through illustrators and gave them a list, I think, of like 5 illustrators that we thought would be great for it. And our number one choice was Jeff Stokely. But we knew, you know, you're pitching a pretty big project to this guy. He may not be available because he's a pretty prominent illustrator. But thankfully, he was available, and he was totally into the idea and excited to do it. So,
So when you pitched it to the publisher, it was pitched. You had, like, a novel written, or you took the screenplay, and that's why it became a graphic novel, because you already have the abbreviated text to transfer over. Did you then have to rework it into a graphic novel?
Yeah, we just took it to them as a screenplay. And we went through some edits with them, you know, and we made some changes before it was adapted. I feel a little bad now, so I just finished writing another graphic novel, and it's a children's graphic novel ghost story. And I did all of the right things in it. I had, you know, the illustrator direction and the scenes broken down by panels. But when we did Piper, we had no panels broken down. We didn't have any of that. We just handed Jeff Stokely and said, here, make this a book.
Which shows how talented he is, obviously.
Yes. And he actually said he loved that. He had a lot of fun. He had adapted a Jim Henson screenplay prior to doing ours. So he had experience doing that. But...
So how did that, I know this is going to be a unique experience, but how does the collaboration work insofar as, you know, you write this line, I write this line, you write X, then I'll go through it, and then I'll write X, or this is the idea we're doing, and when you don't agree on an idea for the direction, how did that all work out?
Yeah, so we plotted it out, we did a screenplay outline, and then we kind of shot that back and forth with each other until we got it hammered away into a space that we liked. And then we just picked sections and started writing it and then shooting it back and forth to each other with free range to make any changes we wanted without asking.
Right.
And then we'd shoot it back to the other person. Sometimes I wouldn't even notice the changes that were made, but I know that there were changes made, but they had all blended really nicely. So they didn't stick out to me. Sometimes there were big things that we wanted to do differently and we just hashed it out over the phone. You know, I think you have to collaborate with someone that you're super comfortable with so that you can tell them that their work is crap and they can tell you that your work is crap and you don't feel bad about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you would assume that that you're working together because you trust and believe in each other's talent and not just because it was convenient in the moment or something.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I collaborated with another person, my good friend, Natalie Fowler, on the Monsters of the Midwest book too. And I don't know, I love collaborating. I think it's a ton of fun and I feel like it just brings out, it takes an idea and it makes it even better because, you know, you've got two minds thinking of it in a different way, two creative people kind of brainstorming together. I think it's a lot of fun.
Wow. So this is kind of just a half serious question. Would you say you spend more time hashing out the story or actually writing the story?
Well, it feels like when you're hashing it out that it's going to take forever. I think once you get it hashed out, it writes itself pretty fast. I think Piper only took us 3 months from start to finish to write.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty good. But because I guess also when you speak about it enough, you're almost giving yourself the words that you're going to need to actually write down almost instead of, you know, when you're sitting down and you're just writing the story and you got to start thinking about it because you didn't really talk it through yet to find those words yet. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the stuff that took a long time was kind of the research because it was historical. You wanted to get those bits of history accurate.
Right. So asking about that. So Piper is based on the Pied Piper legend, right? But if you go back and look at the original, there's not that much. And I'm only saying that because I mentioned to you before that I just finished writing something also that it's more inspired than based on the Pied Piper than actually like a rewrite of the Pied Piper. But when I went to look, I was surprised at how much there wasn't on it. It just seemed like there were just a few tales and accounts or like some stained glass windows or something and not more than that. So how much of that you're like, okay, we got to make sure that because there's only 5 facts, we got to get those 5 facts in? Or how much of it is like, this is a general idea, we're just, you know, let's just do something new.
So when you look at the beginning of our graphic novel, Piper, I wish I had it in front of me because I don't remember details super well, but there's actually something in the historical records of Hamelin, Germany, and it's written out about when the children went away, that the Piper came to town and the children followed him and never came back. And I believe it was a quote from, like, the friar's mom. So it was a very, like, respected woman who was telling this thing that happened. So it's based on something that really happened in Hamelin, but nobody really knows what it was, if the kids were taken off for the Crusades or...
disease or something,
Yeah, nobody really knows. So that was kind of the piece of history that we knew about the legend. The other things that we were really researching were the details of that time period and just wanting to make sure that we didn't kind of pervert what would have actually been in that time period. So, like, we have a scene toward the end where the piper plays an organ of some sort, like a piano thing.
Yeah.
And we found in our research that the first organ like that didn't actually exist for another 100 years.
Oh.
And so we're like, okay, well, what do we, how do we get rid of that? We need it. It's super important to this part of the story. And so we burnt it down so there would be no remains of it. So we're like, okay, there, it's gone.
That's something that people don't think about, because you usually tend to mush all the Middle Ages, all historical stuff between like 1100 and I feel like almost 1600 gets mushed into the same category. And there's a lot of years in between there. A lot of things happened in that time.
And a lot of people wouldn't notice it. I mean, probably no one would have ever thought twice about it except for Jay and I. We would have been like, that's not historically accurate.
Right. Well, now you're definitely going to look out for it. Yeah. You're going to be the ones reading some like highly praised book. And you're like, but there's an organ in there and there shouldn't be. So I got questions about the story now.
That didn't exist for another 20 years.
And then, what's that? So that one also is a young adult, right? That's young adult. So, and then it is also considered horror, or what is it considered? Or just graphic novel, or what is it considered?
I don't know if it would be classified into horror. I think it might qualify as horror because it's a creepy legend.
Right.
I feel like that net can cast pretty wide to be part of the Horror Writers Association of America. That qualified for that. But there's so many different kinds of horror. You know, you have the slasher horror, and then you have, you know, the Hill House horror, which is like my favorite kind of horror.
Right, because I feel like also once something's like a fairy tale rewrite, it just becomes fairy tale rewrite. Like everything just like falls. The retelling category is just like a catch-all category also. They'll just throw everything into it. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that could happen. Okay. So just want to ask quickly about the Horror Writers Association. That's anybody who writes horror or wants to write horror can be part of that or is part of that. How does that one work?
Yeah, you can be. There's a couple different levels of membership that you can have. I think there's an annual fee that I pay to be part of that. And then if you are published, you can have one level of membership, and if you're not published, you have another level of membership. But they have a magazine or an newsletter type thing that goes out. They have different competitions that you can take part in. It's just a community you can connect with. I wish it was a little bit more hands-on, like with conferences and things in my area. They had a regional, you know, Horror Writers of America in Minnesota. I'd love that, but they don't.
Oh, they don't have regional chapters.
No, I don't think they have one here. I think they have some in other areas. But I remember when I joined, I was like, I should offer to start the Minnesota one. And I'm like, oh, stop, crazy woman. You have 3 kids. You're too busy. You So I haven't taken as much advantage of that organization as I probably should, or as, you know, as would be beneficial to me. But I like getting the newsletters from them in my email. I like to read those.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I have one more question about the graphic novel. Did they show you any of the artwork before it went to print? Did you have any say over the artwork? Or once you had chosen, you know, said, I trust this illustrator, it was kind of like, okay, bye now, we're going to take care of the rest of it.
Yeah, we were really lucky that we did have some say in that. They would send us kind of the sketches before they were colored in. And I know they sent us the cover and the characters that Jeff had kind of planned out, and we looked at the piper and I said, he doesn't look right. We both felt like he didn't look right. He kind of looked a little meaner than we wanted him to look.
Right.
And this is kind of an embarrassing admission number two. When I was writing Piper, my daughter was in a show at the Guthrie Theater here in Minnesota, and the child wrangler, we call him, the people who took care of the kids backstage, the child actors.
Right.
He was like what I envisioned the piper as looking like.
Oh!
I was working on Piper. I was looking at this young man, and he just had this just wonderful look about him. And as I was writing Piper, I'm like, that's my piper right there. Like, I was so inspired by him. And so when they sent me the initial character images with the piper, I creeped on his Facebook page, and I took a picture, and I sent it to Penguin. And I said,
what?
Can you give this to Jeff and make the piper look like this?
Oh, no.
And they did. So the Piper looks just like the wonderful young man who took care of my child when she was doing a play at the Guthrie. And he knows, I told him.
I was just going to ask that. Yeah, okay.
He's like, I'm so embarrassed, but you look like my Piper.
What was his reaction? Was he just, okay, whatever? Or like, yay, I'm famous.
he thought it was great. He That's was good. So sweet. But That's I'm like, good. Yeah, this is embarrassing. Ella's mom is really weird.
You know what? I do have to wonder, though, that if you're the creepy lady, how come you don't own, like, 50 cats? Or at least one blonde cat? Is that a stereotype that you're trying to fight against? Or what's the deal with that?
You know what? I'm super allergic to cats, or else I probably would have one.
Oh! Okay, so just in case anyone thought that you're not like the pure creepy lady, like you do have it. You have it.
Yeah, I just can't have cats. They make me sneeze. I tried to have a bunny and I ended up being super allergic to him, and I had hives for a year before I finally admitted I can't have this rabbit in my house anymore.
Oh, bummer. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, and then I noticed also with the Piper, you added in, there's a girl also who's like a big player in that, right? You
kind of have the main character is Magdalena, and she's hearing impaired. She was injured in kind of a bullying incident that took away her hearing. She was hurt and her brother died in the bullying incident that occurred. And so she's kind of an outcast. Her mom was an outcast. She's an orphan. She lives with kind of an outcast lady kind of outside of town. But I would say in the Piper is almost, I mean, he's the main character, but to me, Magdalena is the main character, and her growth throughout that story is my favorite part about it.
Well, and you do switch between their POVs, so it's kind of, they do both get playing time in that regard. Yeah, well, I guess hearing impaired has to happen, right, if she's not going to be seduced by the Piper's music or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and isn't there part of the legends, though, that he could... One second, that he blinded someone or I don't want to say maybe crippled somebody also with the pipe? Aren't there legends that say that also?
I don't know that part of the legend. You know what? That's a new part of it to me.
You know what? I got to see if I made that up for my story or if I actually based on something.
Well, I like it. If you made it up, I think it's super cool.
Yay! Do you want to buy my book now?
I do. I totally want to buy your book.
Okay. Well, you know, it's got to get picked up first, but we'll see what happens. Oh, man. Very good. Okay. Oh, man. Time always gets away on these. Okay. So just to wrap it up. We always end, and you could just say the first thing that pops into your mind if you don't have, you know, it doesn't have to be some deep meditated answer, but I always love to end with the fill in the blank of, I love it when, you know, it could be books, writers, publishers, authors, illustrators, whomever do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. How would you fill in either of those blanks?
Okay. Well, I really don't like it when editors ask me to change my stories.
Well, wait, that's called being a writer, right? No.
I really don't like that. I'll tell you a little scenario. When we wrote Piper, there was a lot of crying on my end, and I hung up the phone, so I was professional about it, but then I called Jay back, and I was crying because they wanted us to change what happens to the children, and I was very upset about it. But on the same note, I would say I really like it when editors ask me to change my writing, because I feel like even though I was sobbing and swearing and hysterical over the change that they wanted made, when the book was finished, it was the right choice, and I would have never made that without them interjecting their thoughts. So
that's great. But what's that? Are you making the distinction between changing the writing as in the wording versus the story, or you're saying it's the same on both angles?
I would say both angles. I mean, because what they changed in the Piper, and I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give away anything, but It was a pretty major piece of the story, and I felt like they were ruining it.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, because everything makes so much sense in your own mind.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I will say it was with the children. The children. I wanted all the children to die.
Oh yeah. Okay. Creepy lady here. Yeah.
So I was dark. Literally crying. The children.
Hey, no, we don't mean it like that.
That's the legend. The children are gone. The children died.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. That is the legend, right?
but that was a little too dark, and yeah. So there were some changes made. And but the way that the story ended up with that change that they asked us to make, I felt like it actually made that transformation of Meg Delena at the end even more powerful. So it was
fantastic.
A good change.
Yay, we love it when that kind of stuff happens. Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Oh, very good. All right. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for your time. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. And
My pleasure.
This is great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's so fun.
This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. To find out more about Jessica and her work, please look at the link in the episode notes. To follow Oh My Word Podcast and see all the great things we're up to, follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word Podcast, please visit eltenenbaum.com. Thanks for joining us. Catch you next time.